Today's program has been brought to you by Le Creuset. Visit Le Creuset for cast iron and stainless cookware, bakeware, pots, pans, and kitchen and bar tools. For more information, visit www.lecreuset.com. That's LECREUSET.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Everybody, welcome to Sharp and Hot. I am your host, Chef Emily Peterson, broadcasting on heritageradionetwork.org from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This is episode 17, and I'm very, very excited to get my guest on the line with me at the top of the show. She's coming from the middle of the country, Jen Andrews, co-creator of my very favorite podcast, TBTL, and writer of the blog that lives up to its name, prettysnarky.com. Hi, Jen.
Hi, Emily.
How are you?
I'm doing great.
I'm
the polar vortex is over.
I was going to ask you that. Are you still freezing?
No, but I also am entirely tired of my 12 meals that I can make. You know what I mean?
Okay.
I had to cook every single meal for days and days and days, and I found out how limited my repertoire is.
So what happened? You went to the grocery store before the storm, and then were you stuck?
Yeah.
Okay, so you were stuck inside with just the ingredients that you had.
Well, I'm from Seattle, and we don't really have... We have snow very rarely, and when we do, it just shuts the whole city down, which I know everywhere else in the country can't quite believe that, but we don't venture out. And so when I hear snow's a-coming, I prep to stay inside for the duration.
So what are a handful of the things that you got sick of while you were stuck inside?
Pasta.
Okay.
It was the main thing because I had switched over to... rice pasta.
Okay.
And so, and that was just based on the fact that my nephew went gluten-free, and I wanted to make sure that I knew how to take care of him when he comes. He's in college, so you know he'll come for the weekend.
Okay.
And so I bought a bunch of brown rice pasta, and then I attempted to make, I made a red sauce a couple times, and then I tried to do a more of a broth sauce a couple of times, and... neither of them had enough flavor to be interesting to anybody.
Okay, yourself included.
Right. I'm my worst. I mean, I'm the worst critic. I mean, I take one bite and I'm like, well, this isn't very good.
Well, one of the things that I've noted that you've said in the past on TBTL is that you make risotto every week. Are you still making risotto?
Yes.
And was that something
I
that
make a lot of? I actually don't know that you can get sick of risotto. I can't.
Right, I feel the same way.
I love it. I do think that whenever I try to mix it up a little bit, my favorite thing to add is red wine and gorgonzola.
Ooh, yum. Ooh, that sounds
good. So that's my go-to, and that one generally is pretty popular. When I try to go with, like, sweet Riesling and Parmesan, that one doesn't ever do very well.
Okay. I'm a big fan of cooked sausage and really, really well-sautéed mushrooms.
I don't do mushrooms, although it makes me feel ashamed when I say that because I feel like adults should eat whatever is put before them, and I do eat whatever is put before me, so I do eat mushrooms quite a bit, but I don't prefer them, and I have tried lots of different kinds, but I keep trying new kinds thinking maybe I just haven't found the one I like.
So it's interesting. Do you think that it's a textural thing, or do you think it's a flavor thing, or where do they come from?
It's flavor.
Okay.
It's definitely flavor.
So then
I just don't
like
how the flavor is.
Yeah, you might just not like mushrooms. I think that's okay. One of the...
Is it? I don't know. I haven't ever... I still feel like that makes me have a childish palate. You know what I mean? The idea that I don't like mushrooms makes me think that I haven't fully grown up.
Well, do you say that about a lot? Like, do you hear yourself saying a lot like, oh, I don't really like mushrooms. I don't really like asparagus. I don't really like black olives. Or is it really just mushrooms? Or are you feeling like...
It's just mushrooms, although I do have to say that I don't... It's not that I'm against it. I just feel like parsley... I've never felt that parsley added anything to any dish I've ever eaten.
Oh, I'm going to send you some usages of parsley. We could talk about them in the next 30 minutes, because if I had to choose one ingredient that I would have for the rest of my life, it would be parsley.
No,
I love
really?
It. I love parsley, and it's because you can make anything like bright and refreshing and have some crispiness to it. I use the stems and the leaves, and you mix it in, and it's all, like, if you put enough parsley in something, it can almost be like a parsley salad, which is what tabbouleh is. Like, tabbouleh should be mostly parsley and then have some bulgur wheat and other stuff mixed in, but it's really a parsley salad.
It's so interesting. It's so interesting you would bring that up, because I went to a Lebanese restaurant and I ordered the tabbouleh and I was like, well, they didn't make this right. It's mostly parsley. and then I found out that I've been eating it the Americanized way, which is hardly, you know, parsley is the garnish. And I found out, I prefer that.
Okay, but did you like it? Did you like that treatment of tabbouleh? Or were you like, no, this isn't my thing?
I didn't dislike it. Like I said, it's not that I'm anti-parsley. I just never think it adds much. I always feel like I have to dump on a ton of lemon.
Well,
that's what I always end up doing whenever I have a meal that has a lot of parsley. I end up just dumping on tons of lemon.
But that's like saying every time I have strawberries, I want to dump on a lot of chocolate. Like, that's a natural thing to want to do, because those two things make each other better.
Oh, okay.
So I wouldn't feel bad about lemon. And also, do you use lemon zest or lime, any citrus zest, or are you just using the juice?
I only use zest when it says to do it in the recipe. It never occurs to me.
In anything that's calling for juice, start zesting the lemon first that you're making. Unless you want to have something like perfectly smooth and clear, like the zest would be a textural thing that you don't want, like in a, like you mentioned, mm-hmm. a broth-based pasta, you might not want the zest floating around, because it might be a little, you know, might texturally be weird. But, I use zest in everything, too. Zest and parsley are, like, my two go-to things.
Okay, as long as we're talking about helping my meals that I'm so sick of.
Yes.
My easiest thing that I do all the time is just put boneless, skinless chicken breasts in the oven on 350 for 30 minutes.
Okay.
Just because it'll get it cooked. That sounds so awful, but at the bare minimum, I know that there will be a protein that is cooked.
Right, and if there's a polar vortex outside, survival, like, that's important to know you have some cooked protein in the fridge. That's totally fine.
Right, but I can tell that I can tell that I'm not doing what I could be doing. You know, I love rosemary, I love salt and pepper, and I love balsamic vinegar, but I think that I have gone to that well too many times. So my rosemary balsamic cooked chicken breasts, everybody's sick of, including me.
So you mentioned in the email conversations that we had leading up to this that you have a can of sardines sitting in your cabinet and you don't know what to do with them, right?
Yes, and that's really embarrassing. That's a matter of going to the movies and then going out for drinks to talk about the movie and then stopping at the store really quick. And I swear to God, I thought I was buying anchovies. I'm pretty sure it was the wine post Philomena, which was kind of a downer movie. And so I think I had too much wine. And then I decided to buy some anchovies and got home and realized they were sardines. So now I've had this tin sitting for 3 weeks, but I have no idea what to do with it.
What were you going to do with the anchovies?
I was going to add it to my bland pasta sauce.
So that's exactly what I was going to recommend doing with the sardines. You can mince them up really, really fine. Even if they have bones in them, the bones will just melt away. And you can put them in your pasta sauce at the beginning with, like, the onion and garlic. Put your sardines in with some capers if you have it, or sliced olives if you have it. And then add your tomatoes and let it cook down. And you'll have this sort of enriched sauce that, just like adding anchovies, it's not going to taste like sardines. No one's going to say, oh, this is like fish sauce. Although if you throw in a can of tuna at the end, that would also be delicious. If that's
now, when you say mince it, do you mean like put it in the on puree in the food processor, or do I have to do it?
You can do it in the food processor, but it would, if it's like a just like a regular little can of sardines, it's going to be faster, and you don't have to wash the food processor. So unless you're getting it dirty for other reasons, it's easier to just chop it really fine with your own knife.
Okay.
Once you've done that,
what is the how much of it though? Like, for if I'm making pasta for four, how much of the should I put in the whole tin, one of those little tins?
I would do like two fillets. So of that, there's probably about four. There's somewhere between four and eight fillets in that little tin. I'd use like two or three of them. Alternately, to go back to your chicken, you can make what's called I think I'm using this term loosely. It's called a panade, which is a mixture of like breadcrumbs and some sort of fatty oil. So you can mince up your sardines really, really fine. Add in enough breadcrumbs so that they get wet with the sardines, and then smear that paste on top of your chicken breasts before you bake them. And then that will sort of infuse some flavor. And then when you chop up your chicken, all of that deliciousness will get mixed up into the chicken breasts that you've cooked.
That's what I'm going to do tonight.
They're really, really good.
So, I have all the things you just mentioned. I'm so excited.
Okay, so you're going to salt and pepper your chicken breasts. You may want to rub them with a little bit of olive oil. Then you're going to mince up your fish really, really fine. If you have any like capers or any other anything like super pungent likes to go together. So black olives would be good in there. If you want to throw in some lemon zest or parsley, this would be a really good place for it. And then
I don't want to throw in any parsley.
But lemon or lime zest would be good. Mix it together with breadcrumbs. If you have panko, do you have panko breadcrumbs?
It's kind of like panko.
Perfect. Mix those together so that it's like a paste. And you'll have to eyeball it and then smear it out onto your chicken. And it doesn't have to be very thick. It can be kind of like a thin coating. And then if you want to make
For the last couple of years, I've been putting aluminum foil over it because in my mind that makes it stay moist. Is that true or not?
No, that's not true.
That's not true. Okay.
That's not true. No, I would. And if you want moist chicken, the key is to use thighs. Thighs they have much deeper flavor. They have a lot more fat, which is a good thing in chicken because your dried out chicken breasts is because they have no fat at all. So if you want that like juicy, rich, chickeny flavor, switch to thighs. But they're a little more like mangled looking, and I totally understand why people are like, oh, they have like weird chunks hanging off of them. Chicken breasts are so easy, and they're like cleaned up beautifully, boneless, skinless. They look like what they're supposed to look like. Don't overcook them if you're sticking with chicken breasts.
Although, I was going to say, I mean, I think you just actually said the title of my recipe, according to my husband, dried up chicken breasts.
So that tells me you're leaving them.
That's what we're having tonight.
So you taught yourself that the tinfoil topping is not working.
Everything I taught myself. So I grew up in I had a single parent. It was my dad.
Okay.
And he basically, his go-to was pancakes for any meal.
Okay.
So I did not, and then I took one semester of home ec when I was in high school, and then that was it. And so every single thing is something that I learned from watching it on TV, reading it in a magazine, or just putting together deductive reasoning like, oh, if I put aluminum foil over the top, it'll trap in the moisture and they'll stay moist.
It'll trap the moisture.
So I think I'm filled with a lot of bad knowledge. Right.
I can be your lifeline. You can call me anytime. If you're in the kitchen off air, I'll give you my cell phone number. The aluminum foil, your reasoning is sound. It'll act like a tent, but it's not going to keep the moisture in the chicken itself. It's going to come out of the chicken, and then as soon as you lift the tin foil off of your chicken, it's going to dissipate out into the air. So the key is to
That explains a lot.
Yeah, don't overcook your chicken, with or without the tin foil. Do you have an instant read thermometer?
Okay. But I only use it on Thanksgiving. Should I use it more often?
You should use it all the time. One of the times that I was screaming at you and Luke on TBTL at my radio when I was in the car was when he was advising you to test the doneness of, I think it was burgers on the grill, by poking your finger into the flesh of your palm. I was screaming at the radio. Never, never, never do that, because an instant read thermometer, there's no room for error. A burger is done when the thermometer reads whatever temperature you're going for. Technically, in the world of food safety, you want your burgers to be done at 165 degrees. Your chicken breast, you want to take out of the oven when the instant read thermometer reads like 150, and then leave it on the counter for 10 minutes before you slice into it. And what'll happen is it'll continue cooking with something called carryover. So it'll still get – the inside of the meat will still continue to rise in temperature even though it's out of the oven for about 10 minutes. And you can actually watch it happen while you have the thermometer stuck into your chicken. So just like you do with your turkey on Thanksgiving, I'm assuming it's turkey, whatever, your roast on Thanksgiving, you do that with everything, because then there's no guesswork about whether or not something is done or overcooked. And the fear of eating undercooked chicken, you know, makes people cook it until it's dusty in the middle, which is not a good thing.
No.
So use your InstaRead. Love your InstaRead. I have like 4 of them because I need to know that I can always find one in my drawer. And I have kind of like a junk drawer right in the middle of the kitchen that has all sorts of odds and ends, and 4 or 5 InstaRead thermometers are always in there so that I know I can figure out if my chicken's done, my burger's done, my pork's done. And I've been cooking since I could see over the stove, and I very heavily rely on a thermometer.
Okay.
So it's not a mark that you don't know what you're doing. Relying on the tension in your bicep or your palm, and I've heard all sorts of other things, that to me is like dude standing around at a grill being like, yo, I don't need a thermometer. But the truth is you do.
I do know that I my biggest problem, I think, in my cooking is that I have too much confidence.
No, that's okay. So, you just have to harness it.
Yes, exactly.
And you're still cooking, which is amazing. I mean, I have friends who are like, oh, yeah, I tried that once. It really didn't work out. So now I, like, order out every meal. So do you have cookbooks in your house? I mean, you mentioned magazines, and you watch food cooking shows.
Mm-hmm.
Do you own cookbooks?
I do, yeah. But I don't look at them very often. I mean, this is what I'm saying to you. It's like I'll have a meal in a restaurant, and then I'll just decide, oh, I'll just make that. And I, you know, don't have most of the ingredients, and I don't really know that much, but I just have this overwhelming confidence that I can make it happen. And the fact is that 1 out of 15 times, it's a hit.
Yeah.
And that fuels me.
Yeah, no, and that's awesome. And the truth is, having worked in restaurants, the secret is salt and butter. Or fat of really of any kind. But the joke was when I worked, and I worked in what was considered sort of a healthy restaurant, even though that wasn't what we were focused on. The outside world sort of decided that. Everything got butter. Like, we joked, even the salads had butter on them. Like, everything did, and that's why they're so delicious, because they're not chefs in restaurants who are making your food aren't shy about using those two ingredients. Listen,
and that's our joke in our house, because we don't cook with a lot of white flour, and we don't have sugar, and we don't have butter. We don't have any of those ingredients in our house, and that's to keep our weight down, because our idea was, if we don't cook with any of those things in our house, then when we're out at restaurants or we're at someone else's home, we won't be shy about it. We'll have a great time, we'll enjoy it, and we won't worry. So that was our idea, is that we would kind of split it.
Is it working?
Well, it works, except that nothing that we make tastes very good here in the house. And then when we're at a restaurant and the meal comes, my husband Jason, almost every time we'll be like, this is amazing. I'm like, yeah, because it's got sugar and butter in it. Right. Of course it's amazing.
It
does kind of make the cooking at home a little downer.
Yeah. And, you know, my big thing is I eat whatever I want, but I've become a little bit maniacal about controlling my portion size. So I cook with butter. I cook with really good olive oil. I cook with really good everything. And I'm not shy about using full fat stuff, but I just try not. And it's so hard because my husband has not made this decision and has not made that life change. So he's like scooping up like a huge heaping bowl of like beautiful risotto. And I'm like, no, I'm going to have a half a cup, and I'm going to put my fork down between each bite, and I'm going to love it. Listen, I need to take a quick break, and then we'll come back and I'll give you some more pointers to sort of mimic some restaurant techniques. How's that sound?
Wonderful.
Okay, cool.
Hey girl, what you doing with that bucket?
It's not a bucket, it's a tub.
Well, why don't you get yourself a real bass?
Cause it's not just a tub, it's a soul tone.
Wow, I like that.
Mm-hmm. I bet you never knew.
Nah.
What a bucket can do.
Guess not.
You're listening to Soul Tub by the California Honey Drops on heritageradionetwork.org.
I'm talking about a soul tub. Just give me a little soul tub. Say you never knew what a buck could do.
Sharp and Hot is brought to you by the generous support of Le Creuset. Respect for tradition and authenticity has been Le Creuset's guiding principle since 1925. Yet, their innovative designs and exceptional quality ensure that they remain relevant today. The company began in 1925 when a casting specialist and an enameling expert opened their foundries at the crossroads of transportation routes for iron, coke, and sand. That same year, the first French oven was produced, laying the foundation for what is now an extensive range of cookware and kitchen utensils. Today, Le Creuset provides the finest quality stainless steel, stoneware, silicon, enamel-on-steel, textiles, and forge-hard anodized aluminum, as well as the colorful line of cast iron cookware. Visit LeCreuset.com and shop the full line of cookware, stoneware, bakeware, kitchen tools, wine accessories, and more. Heritage Radio Network thanks Le Creuset for their generous support. Welcome back to Sharp and Hot. I'm your host, Chef Emily Peterson. On the line with me is Jen, co-creator of my favorite podcast, TBTL, and PrettySnarky.com. And we have been talking about ways to make your home food delicious, even if you're trying to keep your waistline slim, which is something that I'm also struggling with. I've been going to the gym, Jen.
And
yeah. My New Year's resolution was to become someone who loves going, who needs to go to the gym. I want to be one of those people who says, "Oh, I have to go. I have to go to the gym." And it's working a little. It's much easier now that all the college kids have gone home because I don't have to share the equipment with them.
But I feel like the people who say that are the same people who say things like, "Yeah, I'm just not hungry very often."
Yeah,
you know, I don't understand that mindset at all. I understand there are people out there that forget to eat. I understand that in my brain that happens, but I can't in real life imagine that.
I had a conversation on Facebook with a guy that I went to high school with, because he posted that he hates eating because it takes away from thinking. So three times every day he has to hate eating because it's making him stop thinking. And I posted back, like, I think almost exclusively about eating, and we just had this impasse of no understanding. We were like two different continents looking at each other like, I don't know where to go with this. But it was the saddest thing I've ever
heard. I love the idea that he is so focused on his eating that he can't be thinking at the same time. I mean, why can you not do both?
I don't know. I really wanted to pick up the phone and find out more about what was behind that. And
dig into that.
My only hope is that it was a flip comment that he didn't expect anyone to catch. I don't know what was behind that. All right, listen. During the break, I thought of a really, really good resource for you to use. There's an amazing cookbook that's my Bible called Plenty, which was written by a man named Yotam Ottolenghi. And he has several books, and he won the James Beard Award for his cookbook called Jerusalem. And Plenty is all vegetables, and so you'll eat really healthy, but the recipes are so dynamic that it's like there's a potato upside down cake recipe that he makes where he starts by making a base of caramel, and then he puts the potatoes on top of the caramel with some sun-dried tomatoes and other mix-ins, and then you bake it and turn it over so that the caramel, which is not a lot, there's probably a quarter of a cup to serve eight people, but it like soaks through all the vegetables, and the balance of sweetness and salty in his food really, really mimics what you get in restaurants in a way that, as you know, some recipes just don't, they just don't cut it. And his are flawless and they're really, really good. That being said, the book is huge and heavy. So I put a link up on sharpandhot.com to his column on the Guardian's website. And he writes a weekly food column, and he gives recipes like seven ways to cook lentils and his take on chili, but the pictures of chicken. And so I would really, really recommend checking out what flavor combinations he's put together. He makes use of a lot of vinegar, which is something that if you are...
I have a lot of vinegar.
Vinegar
different
is...
Different kind.
Yep. Vinegar is excellent, excellent condiment. I highly, highly
as
recommend...
As long as you brought up lentils, can I ask you a question about lentils?
Sure.
What am I looking for when I'm sorting lentils? I realize I'm doing it, and I don't even know what I'm. What is the point?
You're looking for
what am I trying to find?
Rocks.
What is the problem?
Rocks have made their way in, and I never believed that was possible until I found one. I was like, holy cow, it does happen.
And okay,
it'll
I'm
look like
for
a rock.
Rocks.
Yep. And okay. So you want to, I mean, I don't spend more than a minute, because if once I saw a rock in them, I knew exactly what it was. I was like, holy crap, there's a rock in there. So it wasn't like I had, okay. You don't have to inspect each lentil. Anything that's not the right color or not the right size is going to stand out immediately. Now, right. Do you know okay. that there are many, many types of lentils that have different cooking properties and you use them for different things?
I really only have ever used red lentils.
Red lentils?
And that's only because I have the recipe from the back of the red lentils package at Trader Joe's.
Right.
And so I cut that out one time and learned it. Yeah, you know how that happens, where for some reason one time you had this one recipe in your house and you learn how to do it, and then that's just, you become kind of trapped.
Someone came up to me at a family party over the holidays and said, oh, I need your mother's oatmeal cookie recipe. Her oatmeal cookies are just amazing. And I looked at her, it was my aunt, and I said, it's on the back of the oatmeal container. She didn't believe it. She was like, no.
I've made that very one.
So it's all about, yeah. And if you have something that you love, I mean, there's no reason. It's when you start getting sick of it. So seek out, if you can find French Dupuy lentils. It's D-E and then capital P-U-Y, which is, I believe, the name of a place. And they'll keep their shape. And so they'll behave almost like rice when you cook them as either a hot side dish or the main course. But you can also mix them like salad in a way that you can't with red lentils, because they fall apart, in, which is their job. Mm-hmm. But these are, they're mm-hmm. one of my very favorite things. They're a beautiful color. They're almost like blue green. They're so dark green, they're almost borderline on blue. And if you mix in like other colorful things, some back to the citrus zest, some back to parsley, but you could use any type of like salad greens that you have, red onion, yellow or orange bell pepper. It'll totally brighten up the salad. And in the middle of winter, I think that humans have like a desire to see things that are bright and colorful, and they're really, really healthy for you. So you don't have to feel like you're giving up on, like, if you're trying to eat a chicken breast that doesn't have any butter or fat in it, it's going to be disappointing. But if you're eating a beautiful, yep. refreshing salad that's zingy and bright and colorful, you're not going to miss the fat, because every other sense is being satisfied. Does that make sense?
Yes. Absolutely.
So in making your decisions about how you'll put together, I mean, and the truth is I probably at home only eat 12 to 20 different things. I mean, I love macaroni and cheese, and I love meatloaf. Like, these are the things that I can do without uh-huh. thinking. I have a toddler, and so it's also narrowed down my creativity, because it's just like, get some food on the table. So when you're making your decisions about how you're going to put your ingredients together, think about your senses beyond just taste. Because if you're taking butter off the table, you have to appeal to your other four or five senses in order to fill in that gap.
Yes.
So.
Okay.
And you're going to go to Ota Lange's website, which the link is on Sharp and Hot. And I am not kidding. You can call me or email me anytime, and I will answer your questions.
Okay.
That being said, that is true for everyone who's listening. I have a voicemail line that I... just re-recorded the like outgoing message, because I sounded so like, hello, thank you for calling Sharp and Hot. And I realized that I've been talking on the radio now, and I feel a little bit more comfortable talking to no one, or talking to everyone, as the case may be. The
phone people should not feel like they're on hold, but they're bank.
Right, exactly. And I was like, man, no, I really need to change that. So I did it last night. I think it's a little bit, it sounds a little bit better. The number is 862-242-8599. You can always tweet me at Chef Emily P. Find me on Facebook.com/sharpandhot. And my website is sharpandhot.com. Jen, how can people find out more about you?
The easiest way is to go to prettysnarky.com, which is my blog, and you can follow me on Twitter at TBTLJen.
And Pretty Snarky is hilarious. And I noticed this morning that quinoa is not, we're totally out of time. We have to talk about this next time. But quinoa is not inherently gross. I promise. It can be so good.
I actually eat quinoa a lot, but it's because I know it's good for me. It's the same with kale. We'll have to do a whole episode on things that I eat because I believe in it, but I don't like it.
Okay. Well, we have the title for the next episode. Jen, this has been awesome. Thank you so, so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. Sharp and Hot is brought to you by the generous support of Le Creuset. As always, we air live on heritageradionetwork.org. Until next week, everyone, keep playing with fire and your knives.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.